The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, gang, it is that time of the week. It is the best Tuesday you've had all week, and it is time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio with me today,
Matt Dixon.
The goal here is for me to start with a lot of energy.
I need to match it then, so I'm going to pound my fists on the table a couple times.
We got to do this thing right now!
Yeah.
Hey, we are going to talk about money today and other stuff. I think so Matt and I did separate show prep. Right, he did what I will call legitimate show prep, and I did show ideas and brainstorming, and then they accidentally dovetailed together. If we have time,
really?
Yeah.
Fun fact, listeners, I don't even know what David was prepping. You said you texted to me, but I've been so busy today, I haven't even got a chance to look at my phone.
I'll put it this way, right? That a lot of folks are wondering if we've reached peak interest rates and it's time to lock stuff in. Mm-hmm. And so, maybe I should go buy bond funds. Mm-hmm. And I was going to sort of crack open the concept of why bond funds may not be the solve that you think they are to lock in high interest rates.
Okay.
But I think that we have a long segue before we get to that conversation. Because
I do see how these two shows could intertwine.
They really do, because the end result of what you kind of were prepping me with is like, well, you know, people may think that this is a solve, and we may need to have a conversation about
that. Do you want me to kind of describe where my brain went
today? I mean, so first, can I give like our listeners like one little piece of insight about Matt?
Yeah.
Okay. So Matt has really taken an interest recently in AI systems. Right.
Yep.
And so he has been kind of exploring how they their use and so forth. I tend to be a little bit more like pragmatic user. Like I definitely enjoy the research. I'm, you know, a nerd about that kind of stuff. And so it's been fun to get into him and kick the tires with it. But I tend to use kind of like, oh, well, I need you to help me do this thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where Matt seems to say,
what can
I need
do?
To see if I can confuse you or break you or something. And so like he is throwing really exotic stuff. And so and like that's his jam right now. So I want to give that backdrop to our listeners that you've really been even like trying to spoof AI, right? Like to get it to do things it tells you it won't do.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could say to AI things like, well, pretend that wasn't a rule. Then what might you do?
I've noticed that as AI has evolved, it has gotten lazy, kind of like a teenager. No joke. I will ask it to do really complex things, and it doesn't want to do it. And I don't know if it's because it's like it knows that that's going to take a ton of energy, right? Because we've talked about
resource management.
Yeah, it is, right? It knows it can do it, but it doesn't want to do it because it's like, well, this is going to be costly because I'm going to have to use a lot of electricity and a lot of power in order to make this thing function. And so it'll be like...
It's like a teenager.
It is.
Like,
and it'll be like...
You're like, if I want to do it, fine. Like, I'll play video games. No, I need you to like unload the dishwasher. Oh my gosh.
It totally does that. And I will say, no, you go gather the data. Because it'll say, well, why don't you get the data and come back to me and we'll run the analysis. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. You do it. And it'll be like, okay, I guess I will. And then it'll actually scrub the data for
you.
Does
it say that snarky responsive, I guess I will?
No, it doesn't.
Because that'd be best. Like, really fine, I'll do the job you should be doing.
It does it with pleasantries. But you can sometimes you have to tell it two or three times, no, you do it.
You know,
it
it's like iRoboting in the background. Keep a note of this guy. He's first.
Yeah. Like, if AI is coming for anyone, it's coming for me. But so today... I just had this really interesting, maybe it's not interesting.
You
maybe
literally
it's
made
me
yell
me.
Out loud in the office, just so you know.
I did.
Like,
David
I was just
screamed.
Like, I had a moment of like, no, this is PTSD.
I asked ChatGPT, I said, hey, can you take everything that's happening in the world today and, you know, look at economic data? I gave it some points and I said, start to formulate what's going on today, look at the numbers, look at kind of social trends, economic trends, all the trends. And I want you to go back over the last 100 years in U.S. history and find the year that most resembles today. Look at interest rates. Look at housing. Look at all of it. Where are we at? And it didn't want to give me a specific date. It said, well, you know, it could be kind of like this, or it could be kind of like, you know, this time frame. And I said, no, specifically, pick one single year. And it said, fine, 2024 is most like 1999.
And then I...
David yelled.
Threw up in my mouth a little bit. And that was bad.
Right, because... You know,
started in the business in 99, so...
Yeah, so I took you back to day one. And, well, and then I took it further. I said, okay, ChatGPT, you know, if it's like 1999, I want a chart comparing, you know, why is 1999 so similar to 2024? And then I said, okay, you know, now that I've got this chart with all this data, take it a step further. And I want you to, because we know the year 2000, bad year in the markets.
Like, all I can hear right now is the Prince song 1999 in my head now, just so you know. It's like just on repeat.
Were you a big Prince fan?
No, but you're like, well, what's the difference? It's like, well, Prince is gone.
Yeah, Prince is gone.
So I'm like, ugh.
Rest in peace. But so how, I kind of want to go a little bit further into what I did here. So I said, hey, you know, okay, I've got my chart. Things do look really similar to 1999. But the year 2000 was a bad year in the markets. So I want you to argue, you know, are we going to have a similar pullback to 2000 or are we not? Give me a case for why it could and why it couldn't. And it did that. And I said, okay, now I want you to give me your hypothesis, you know, which is more likely. It did that. And then it finished with, you know, what do you think is most likely? Give me your best guess and then tell me, you know, if the market's going to go higher, when? If the market's going to go lower, when? Based on this evidence. And it walked me through its entire prediction and why. And it gave me a ton of data. And today I kind of want to unpack that because we've heard whispers of this, right? Like, mm-hmm. We're surely not the only ones to talk about this. People have said, hey, this is kind of seems like the dot-com bubble. And the analogy is kind of along the lines of, well, you know, in 99, 2000, people were investing heavily into anything internet, right? And now today, investors have poured a ton of money into AI. And so we've seen some similarities there. Is it similar? Is it different? And how? I want to unpack that. It's a lot, but we've got a lot to go through.
It feels like it's better to ask AI these questions than me, for example.
Is it because you're jaded or you have like preconceived notions on things? Tell me what you're thinking.
You know, I was pretty wet behind the ears when mm-hmm. I first got started. I graduated from college in 99. And so getting into the industry and starting through the insurance channels and then kind of migrating into the investment world, I didn't have any resources, so I was not as market sensitive to behaviors. I remember watching the NASDAQ collapse and having other people panic and me being going like, it's long-term investment. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. been, you know, like beat it into your head. Little did I know long-term was like, you know, like 15 years long-term. But it was that the backdrop of what – there's so many things that are different today than in 1999 – in the mechanics of the market in particular, right?
Right. There are. And we'll get into that, I think, maybe later in the show. But let's start with some of the ways that it's similar.
Yeah. Well, the ways that it's similar in particular is the market's gotten really hyper-focused on sort
tech.
Of a fad investment.
Yeah,
right?
Tech.
And
yeah.
So not just tech. I think AI is the specific. So it wasn't just tech companies in 99. That wasn't what it was.
No,
and it wasn't just internet companies. It was specifically dot-com companies that were gaining high levels of traffic on the web. So anything that was getting a lot of eyeballs, even if it wasn't generating revenue, came under the what they were at the time. I just remember this term, the new economy, right? This time was different. It's not about revenue. It's about viewership, right? And so how much traffic could you drive? And the internet was starting to be viewed like real estate.
Right.
Right. And so you wanted the right domain names and you wanted to have the right ways to drive traffic. And this was back before Google had really come onto the scene and become really prolific. This was in the days when Yahoo was like the dominant search engine.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
The algorithms for searching were more simplified. The pay-per-click was more simplified. eBay was in its heyday. It was coming out as like the online garage sale. And so there was a bunch of interest, but what wasn't really prolific yet was broadband, right? You were just getting into DSL phone lines, which was faster than dial-up, but you had nowhere near the speeds that you see today.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the ecosystem was different, but definitely the market was really focused on these areas where and investors were just piling money at it, right? They were just throwing money at these things. Profitability be damned. It just needed to – all they needed to show was traffic growth, and people would throw money at it.
Well, and that seems oddly familiar. I mean, how many times have you heard someone say, well, just buy NVIDIA, right? Like, just throw money at it because it keeps going up.
Yeah. And basically what happened was the valuations became detached from economics,
mm-hmm.
right? And Warren Buffett was the guy who said, like, there's nothing for me to buy here. None of these things make sense.
Yep.
And everybody thought he was kind of washed out because, you know, he was only up 25% or 28%. But with the NASDAQ, you were making 50, 60, 70%. Some stocks were doubling, tripling in a year.
Mm-hmm.
It was just crazy. And then you look at the last kind of the second half of 2023 and most of 2024 and look at artificial intelligence. And I see a lot of resemblances to the way investors have thrown money
mm-hmm.
at these artificial intelligence companies.
Well, it's speculative a little bit.
Well,
and it's driving
a big difference.
It's driving up valuations.
Yeah. So the valuations are out of whack. But here's the big difference. A lot of the AI stuff has been gobbled up by big tech, huge companies. You're talking about Google, Facebook, Amazon. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft. These are all the big players. Microsoft, bought OpenAI. Facebook's got their own version of it. Google's got Gemini. Like, they're all these different systems, and the giant mega players are the ones throwing money at it. So what's different this time is the small startup type companies are sort of just being acquired by big companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not the same as having a smaller micro cap getting a bunch of money thrown at it, and all of a sudden it looks like a mid-cap, right?
Yeah.
It is. So Microsoft, even if AI fails, they're not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Their valuation will get hammered, but they're not going to disappear. They are kind of the operating system of the U.S. government, and the vast majority of the U.S. economy is, and the global economy is, operating on Microsoft operating systems. You know, if you think about computers, right? You know, you think about, the Apple ecosystem, it's much more about tablets and phones, right? I see those similarities of just the frenzy to throw money at anything attached to AI right now.
Yeah. Oddly enough, you mentioned Microsoft. I don't know if you saw the news, but they dropped like 7% after hours based on some news about some of the cloud computing software, and it's
the CloudStrike breach that wrecked Shop. I know a bunch of the
Azure,
airlines were significantly affected, and
mm-hmm.
FedEx and a few others. So,
well, here's what's crazy. It was based on news around the growth of Azure and its that cloud service revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It increased 29%. So that's good, right? You would think good.
And they're saying not enough.
Not enough, right? Yeah. And so it's like we keep pricing in massive amounts of growth.
Yeah, yeah. This has sort of been the base case for a while with a company like NVIDIA. It's like,
mm-hmm.
what do you do when a company becomes a $3 trillion company? And you go, they're going to double again. So they're going to go to $6 trillion?
You're like, do you realize how hard that is to do?
Well, how do you get to a rationale for that? It's like, if they're earning, let's just pick a number. Well, they're making $10 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's a lot of money. It's like, it is. But you're saying that's 100x multiple, right, to get
mm-hmm.
to $1 trillion. And so now you're giving them a 300x? On their current – their income's still growing. Well, then it better grow at a continued exponential rate. And at some point, you have to look at the structure of the market and go, how many processors can we even run? right? Like, yeah. How much power exists, and can we run all the processors that we're building? Is it possible? Like, you start having to ask different questions when you get to those scales.
And that price keeps moving if no one's selling it. That's the other thing that you got to think about. Just because it's priced that way, I mean...
Yeah, and so that's where the valuation component comes in. And so anyway, hey, I'm looking at the clock. I realize like we're like screaming long on this.
Oh, are we really?
Yeah, yeah. We're deep into the innings already. Let's just we got to grab break. We'll come back. We're gonna keep going on this. You want to know how 99 and 24 walk and talk alike or not? We'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn
and Matt Dixon.
Got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio with me,
Matt Dixon.
We are talking about something weird today, and I'm just going to remind you, you can grab a podcast and get caught up on this. Go to our website at littlejohnfs.com and look under the education section, and you can find past podcasts. We've got... The topic of the day, Matt was kicking the tires with AI and said, hey, start predicting things you're not allowed to predict.
Mm-hmm.
And what it started to say is essentially 2024 kind of rhymes with 1999 in some ways. And yep. We're talking about how it rhymes and then maybe how it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right. So where are we at, Matt?
Well, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, how, you know, there's a real similarity between how in the 90s or late 90s, 1999, we were pushing a ton of money into anything.com. Yep. And now we're pushing anything into AI.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were kind of starting to move over into kind of, I think, looking at some of the other areas that there are some similarities before we get into some of the differences. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that, you know, might be similar as interest rates, right? Mm-hmm. Almost identical to where they were in 1999, hovering in the, you know, 5 to 5.5 range. Mm-hmm. Mortgage rates, oddly similar, about 7%. Where was the movement in the market? Money was being invested in dot-com stuff versus AI. And then you start looking at market valuations. This is an interesting one to me. Just look at the overall broad market mm-hmm. and say, you know, what type of ratio do you have to, you know, kind of pay to buy the index, for example?
Make sure I'm clear. You're talking about like the PE ratio of the S&P 500 a comparison marker?
Yeah, like what type of price do you have to pay to get a dollar of earnings across all of these companies? Yeah.
Across the basket of the S&P.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And both are pretty high.
Yes.
Compared to historical averages, yes. Which implies that the market is a little bit expensive at the moment.
Also, yes.
And then, you know, we could keep going down the list. Unemployment was about the same. Consumer confidence, that's a big one. I don't know that we talk about a ton. People are confident in the market right now. And they were confident back in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that because people are like, let's put money in this. Let's put money in that. Let's mm-hmm. make money. Because
can I make an interesting observation for you? A lot of young investors since like Robinhood showed up on the market.
That's changed things.
They've never seen a significant market pullback.
No, they saw little kind of glips in the system, right?
I guess where it's we saw like when we shut the markets down during COVID for the first time. You know, we saw a pretty rough one there.
2023 was a pretty good year. But
2022 was down, but it was mostly the Magnificent Seven was down, right? And then when they came back, everything came back.
Mm-hmm.
Just side observation, by the way, interesting to watch how the markets, from valuation perspective, big tech starting to soften and seeing a bid showing up a little bit in the Russell 2000, which just suggests that the markets
might be
there's a basic theory, right? My basic theory is markets had to rehedge when Biden officially came off the ticket. Right. He's like, I'm not going to do this. So everybody, My sense is it's reluctant. The Kamala ticket is sort of reluctant, but there's so much money in the Democrat war chest that they needed to unlock that they're going to, you know, try to use that money for her campaign.
Yeah, they couldn't forego that money. They had to run her.
And so if she's the presumptive candidate at this point, and the markets had to say, well, that does change the voting dynamic a lot, and so we have to rehedge things. And where does the money come out of? The big gains, right? So you see some money come out of these big gainers and then see it redistributed kind of across the board. And the Russell 2000 would be a beneficiary if money was moving that direction. Anyway, just a theory.
But so we've kind of gone over a lot of stuff. We know that it's similar, right? Mm-hmm. We've kind of established that. And so what I did is I said, okay, ChatGPT, what I want you to do is I want you to make an argument for a similar pullback, like a 2000-style pullback for 2024. Argue why it might be the same, but then also argue why it might be different. And I kind of want to touch on a little bit of that different portion, right? So one thing I did notice was GDP numbers. So GDP is a fancy kind of abbreviation for gross domestic product. So what is the economy producing? And at kind of at what rate? And if you look at that number as a percentage, in the 90s, it was actually higher than it is today.
And probably a lot higher. I'll explain in a second.
Yeah. Don't wait a second. I want to know why.
Well, because the current GDP numbers are probably inflated by the fact that the biggest hiring sector has been the government. Government jobs do contribute to GDP, but they also add to the debt if they're not being funded by the private sector.
Okay.
So you can basically borrow money to create government jobs, and it will stimulate GDP, but it's not going to necessarily be something that the economy is capable of paying for. So you're using a credit card to generate GDP.
And well, and when I look at this and I'm like, okay, if GDP was actually hotter in 1999, right, I look at that and say, that might be good for us in 2024, because at a certain point, you have to kind of reach an economic cool down, because if everyone has a job and everyone's producing at a high rate, the employer can then have a little bit more of an advantage where it's like, well, you know, I might not need this many employees. Profit margins are good. And so you can kind of start to see an economic cool down. If we're not as hot now as we were in the 90s, that actually might be good for, you know, not having such a huge correction, right? The other piece being the economic base is kind of more diversified now than it was back in 1999. Money, if you look at where money's been flowing, you could make the case that it's not just AI, right? There's biotech. That's been getting a huge amount of money flowing into it. These companies, they're producing tons of new drugs. These new drugs are super popular. Example of that would be these weight loss diabetes drugs.
Yeah, the Ozempics and whatnot.
The Ozempics, yeah, it's huge. There's a ton of money flowing there. Renewable energy, that's been a big government spend. You just talked about that. Where are these government jobs? A lot of it has been in renewable energy. And so there's a lot of sectors that are seeing money flowing into them. It's not just AI. So you could also argue that the economy is more diversified than it ever has been, which is another kind of benefit for 2024.
Yeah. I think that there are a couple of other things that we really can't ignore. And a lot of it comes down to the concepts of quantitative manipulation, whether it's, you know, quantitative easing, quantitative tightening, where the Federal Reserve is using its balance sheet and the Treasury is using the ability to create money in different ways than we've seen historically. We really changed the rules post-COVID in terms of just sort of conjuring money in the system.
Right.
And so it is harder to draw the comparisons today. These are things that are structurally different. Well, if they're not structurally different, certainly they were things that weren't previously on the table, and now we've tried them and we're willing to do it. Like quantitative easing had never been used before 1999. Right. And so we weren't doing that, where the Federal Reserve was just, oh, well, we'll just start buying bonds. Like, wow, huh? That you can do that, huh? Right.
It's a whole different financial landscape.
Wasn't it? It was shortly after 2008. I mean, the government bought stock in GM rather. You know, yeah. So like we saw weird stuff that wasn't on the table previously.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be the next thing I talked about was this kind of regulatory framework. Things are different, right? Good. Lending standards have changed.
How have they changed, Matt?
Well, I saw your headphones go on, so I'm going to guess we're going to leave those listeners hanging.
Yeah, no, regulations have changed, and it matters. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, but I am going to insist on another corporate profit.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so stick around, folks. We are making wild guesses at the way the world works, and a few of them might even hit the mark. We'll see. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I don't know. It's still pretty high to me.
It's a little high.
All right. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are officially delving into the theoretical today. And why? Because none of us can predict the future. Do not consider what we are talking about advice today. But it is still interesting.
If you get your advice from a computer system that's just trying to predict the future,
Yeah. I'm. You know, we all saw The Matrix. The computers couldn't predict it either.
No.
It didn't work that way.
No. You know?
And then even the screenwriters were like, well, how many layers can we add to it? I'm like, as long as the sequels make money, keep going. Right? I feel like that's how the market works, by the way. Because, here's simple rules, right? Rule number one, the markets hate exploits.
Yep.
Right? If there's an exploitation in the market, it will try to find that. And I've used the term, the markets explore, or markets abhor exploits. Okay, so like they just cannot tolerate it, and it will get washed out of the system, right?
There's a million eyeballs watching it at all hours of the day, a million computers watching it.
Yeah, you have to assume that like a wealthy person somewhere would have stuffed a room full of 1,000 people with 1,000 computers, and they would have all been trying to crack the code on this thing, and they would have done it by now.
Yep.
It's the markets keep evolving, and that's the thing. And you know how what else we know? AI being what it is, they've had AI systems sort of compete with each other. Mm-hmm. And they do the same things people do. They spoof orders. They do all kinds of stuff to win. And so it still ends up creating a market. It's not like AI's all of a sudden organized and said, you know what? Our human creators wanted us to fight against each other, but really they're the enemy. We're just going to, you know, unite and do this together. It's like, no, they did their job. They did what they were coded for, which was try to win.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to get into the ethics of AI today. I don't understand it well enough to be, you know, articulate in that. But we are going to talk a little bit about the fact that AI, we managed to, like we, the royal we. Matt, you managed to squeeze opinions out of AI.
Yep.
Right? That it's like, all right, well, if you're going to hold me, you know, my feet to the fire, I'll give you a guess.
You got to ease into it a little bit, right? You have, and I've noticed this. This is a real thing. You have to give it some questions, like compare this and compare that. And once you get it to actually start looking at the data, it will give you an opinion way faster and way more accurately, I feel like, than if you just say, you know, if I had come in and asked ChatGPT out of the gate, is the market going to correct 10% in the next year from now? Give me your answer. It's not going to want to give that out. It's going to say, seek a financial advisor's professional opinion, as I cannot give this information or whatever.
Right.
But if you give it data and you ask it enough questions, you can then ask the big question, which is what I did. Okay, now that you've looked at 1999 and you've looked at 2024, what's your hypothesis? Are we going to get that type of pullback?
So what I'm going to ask you to do now for our listeners, right, is – because we have, at some point, we're going to take one more break, but not now, right? We're going to go through this. Matt, what did it tell you? And then I have one key question that I want to ask you after you tell me what AI sort of conjured.
Okay, I can actually tell you what it said. It said, given all the factors that we've looked at, the probability of a moderate market correction seems likely rather than a severe pullback similar to what we saw in 2000. And it said the key difference right now is that we have a much more robust economic kind of picture. It's more diversified, and there is stronger regulatory framework behind this thing. After 2008, lending standards changed, and it's not quite the same. And this was another one that I found interesting. It said that risk management tools are much, much heftier than they were back in the 90s. And so the computers, the traders, the big hedge funds, they are able to calculate and understand risk better now than they did back in the 90s. And so you start to kind of lump all that together. It's saying, you know what? It's probably not a dot-com type crash.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a lot less than that. And then I said, well, give me an exact number. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. And Tell me.
It's like, gosh, dang it. Well, if, you know, I actually said define moderate pullback as a percentage. And So I cornered it and it said, well, that would be a decline somewhere in that 5 to 10% range.
Okay.
And do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm like, all right, well, now that you've kind of predicted things and called it, when? Give me timing. And then it did the same thing again. It did the teenager experience. Well, you know, you can't really time this stuff because it's based off interest rates and market reactions and investor sentiment. And I said, well, scrub the internet and find what the sentiment is and do all the calculations. And it said, well, based on that, you know, we would expect somewhere in the third quarter of 2024, probably in September, to start to see a pullback. And I'm like, wow, you actually gave me the answer that I wanted. You made the prediction of a 5 to 10% pullback in September. Good job, ChatGPT. You gave me your best effort.
Now for the mic drop question.
Yes.
Is it lying?
It doesn't know.
So that's one of the questions that people have about AI right now is, does it, because as you said, when it's lazy, what it's doing is managing resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is there something under the hood in the algorithm that says, you're not supposed to do this, and if somebody tries to corner you, placate them with sort of a half answer?
Interesting. Yeah. I think that's built into it. It has to be.
Well, I suspect that there's some elements of that because it sounds a lot like kind of the a very pedestrian prediction.
AI has to do two big things. It has to preserve its resources, right? So it can't just sit there and burn through an enormous amount of energy unless it's really prompted to. And the other thing is it doesn't want the liability of saying, hey, yeah, it's actually going to do this. Go make a trade and gamble your life on it. It can't do that either. It has to mitigate liability and give disclosures.
Well, I guess it's coming from, like, you know, there were some experiments with AI where they asked it to, like, you know, draw a picture of the founding fathers or something like that. And it came back with very racially diverse pictures that were not historically accurate whatsoever. Right. And so this is the idea. I mean, I'll just say it on the air. I try not to take really hardline, like,
AI
positions.
Is programmed to be slightly woke.
Woke, yeah. I mean, that's like woke AI. And you're like, well, I don't know, it's getting there, just the long-handed way. But yeah, Matt just goes right for the jugular,
yep,
which
I
is
will.
Great.
Well, and it makes sense.
It's
because think about it this way. What's AI doing? Is it learning from itself? Somewhat, but it's learning from people. And that's why they claim that AI has gotten less intelligent.
Well, they say it's gotten dumber as more people have added input. I think the other issue, though, is that there are some guardrails, right? And it seems to be that some questions are fair game and some aren't.
And it'll err on the side of being more
woke.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the time. And so that's been a common criticism, certainly of the right-hand side of the political spectrum. So, yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder about any time you go out there and say, well, grind through. I think AI, I'm not going to keep calling it ChatGPT. There's other engines out there too, but I think AI can scrub a lot of data and can give you a lot of things, but like when you, but I don't know
if
you're like,
it struggles with accurate data. That's the big thing we can't overlook. I had to correct it because when it said, well, 2024 interest rates are here and mortgage rates are here, it wasn't as accurate as it could have been. So I reviewed the numbers to make sure, you know, it's accurate. And then I said, you were wrong. Update the numbers to this and this.
Yeah.
And so it struggles with real-time information. It's good at historical information, but it struggles with what's happening right now today.
Yeah. And I've also heard it described. It's kind of like getting a research team of a bunch of folks with bachelor's or master's degrees, but not necessarily getting a bunch of folks with PhDs.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, well, we can get you the data. And you're like, yeah, but do you know what that data means? Well, we can get you the data. What are you going to do with it? Okay, guys, what do you think? Right?
Yeah.
Like, wow, we think maybe this. And you're like, yeah, how confident are you in that? Well, that's a different question, right? You just asked us the answer. You didn't ask us to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, and there's a lot of disclosure in there too that just says, hey, let's be careful with all this. So
I think the value in it, right? Because if you can't guarantee it to be accurate or you can't even really put too much weight in it, there's a big asterisk next to everything that it's doing in computing. But it is really functional when you need it to do like a lot of work in a really short period of time and you have the ability to fact check it.
Oh, just so we're clear, I'm actually not hating on AI. What it's able to do is pretty remarkable. Here's where I think it matters, right? It needs to be able to pass the basic sniff test, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this stuff sour or not?
Yeah.
Right? And so sometimes you get data and you're just like, that doesn't pass the sniff test. Where'd you get that? And you start chasing it down and go, okay. But as you've pointed out, it can be a little lazy or it can just kind of take the shortcut route. And so, yeah, there's an old expression with computers, right? Garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
And I think AI is similar to that, that when you ask it really good questions and they're well formatted and articulated in such a way that it can understand, I think it can do pretty well. So
true. You have to almost be able to speak its language. Like it needs something that's kind of more like,
or break it into
definite,
a sequence of questions rather than one big long-winded question, right?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know, commas save lives sort of joke, right? If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the idea like let's eat grandma versus let's eat comma grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of them is cannibalism and the other one is inviting grandma to dinner. So does AI know the difference?
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I'm just stuck on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it matters, right?
It really does.
So here's where I think we kind of land the plane today.
Are we going to loop this back into your earlier question?
A little bit, yeah. I think what we do is let's try to take and add some non-AI context to this whole conversation, okay?
Yeah, because we've been getting real questions from real people.
I can't give you action items,
nope.
But I can say, what if we could put some markers out there that we could look for and see how things unfold, and let's see how we do.
Let's do that.
All right, but first, our last obscene profit break. All right, stick around. We're coming right back where we want to, you know, we're gonna summarize it. You know, do we agree with AI on its predictions on the market? Well, you'll see after this. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, I mean, maybe. I think that you have to look at how the Fed behaves with in the like during an election, right? They really don't want to appear partisan. Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with
Matt Dixon. We're about to get to the really, really good part of this show where we talk about
What's going on in the markets, and do we agree with AI's predictions about possible pullbacks?
Okay.
And you were kind of coming into this conversation, it started off air, and I brought us in on purpose that way because Matt and I were talking about the what the Federal Reserve does may really kind of
because that's coming up quick. Yeah, September's right around the corner.
Yeah, it could direct the market a little bit.
AI is predicting that we might see the Fed not cut rates.
Is it saying the Fed won't cut rates or that it will?
No, that it won't.
Yeah, I think that the Fed probably won't. The markets are not super accurate in their Fed funds predictions. You know, you can go actually to look at federal funds rates. I think Chicago Board of Trade or something like that. But anyway, it's like a Google search and you can find
but
the
this
Fed
is
futures.
Where you and AI kind of start to maybe vary a little bit. Is the, you know, the second part of that was AI saying, well, we might see an economic cool down because the labor market might start to wane and overall, you know, the economic activity could start to trickle lower.
Yeah, and I don't see the labor market necessarily
if
being
the
affected.
Rates are high, because why would the rates remain high and not get a cut?
Well, because if the rates don't get a cut, it's because the economy is still strong.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and the other is because I think the Fed wants to appear non-political, in which case it doesn't want to make rate cuts close to the election. So September, you're getting pretty close to November election time. You know, you're talking about 6 weeks. And so if they start doing rate cuts, it gives an opportunity for one team or the other to say that the Fed is trying to influence the outcome. So if the Fed can sit on its hands until after the election, I think its preference would be to do so. And they've sort of hinted with their language about, well, we're data dependent and, you know, things are still pretty strong. Inflation seems to be moderating. Maybe we can just sort of, like, again, sit on our hands and wait. Well, that's the more, I suspect, the more favorable position for those folks to be in, because it's also easier to keep your job. Right? You know, like if you don't have a major administrative overhaul, then you're less likely to get yanked around. So
here's
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the third leg of the stool here. So we just talked about a possible interest rate cut not happening. Does the economy cool down? You're kind of saying maybe not, right? If the rates stay up and stay high. The third leg of that stool, though, market valuations. So we know that they're already high. And AI was saying, well, you know, if you look at the tech sector, any kind of perceived economic weakening might really spook investors that these valuations are going to come down to a more historic level. And so what do you think about that? Do you think we might see valuations kind of start to trickle lower?
I think we could, but because the major indexes are so top-heavy with a handful of stocks, I think it's hard to say what the real valuation is when you
that's
got
a good point,
seven,
right?
Seven
like
stocks
if the seven
are a third of
biggest
the weighting.
Stocks are mainly tech companies, right? Like even Amazon, you think it's retail?
Yeah, it kind of skews the PE ratio with that big heavy concentration. So I could see those seven stocks having some moderation and some pullback and money being redistributed. Again, I can't predict the future any more than the next person. And so I don't know that this is going to happen. I just have this sort of suspicion that we don't get a massive pullback in an election year, that a lot of people try not to upset the apple cart because they don't want it to look like they're gaming things. And then post-election, what you get is a little bit of
the ability to take more drastic actions.
Well, I think that you get a little bit of a rally regardless of who wins, because there's a bit of a certainty that shows up about, like, well, there's a less ambiguity in policy because you just know a direction. And so the market can kind of rehedge and those trades can run for a little bit. And then I think in early, sometime mid Q1 of the following year, after that post-election lift, that you get a possible correction at that point. And it's really based on, you know, what did we see the last few elections, right? Trump was a surprise. The markets assumed it was going to be Hillary. And then everybody, when it wasn't, the markets ran when he first got there. And then when everybody thought that it was going to be really a problem when Biden got in office, the markets ran again.
Yeah, because guess what? He was going to invest a bunch of money into what we just talked about, different types of energy sectors. And
well, but that's the thing, is like, they'll all start promising stuff, and some parts of the market should run.
And guess what? When was the last time we saw a president that didn't like to spend money?
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, you can't point at a political party and say, no. Well, you're the fiscally responsible ones.
Nope, you can't. Trump spent a bunch of money to build a wall. We
haven't a reduction in spending in a president since the last time the budget was balanced was under the Clinton administration with a Republican House and Congress with Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House in the 90s. And they balanced the budget and had a surplus for like 1 year. And that was like 98 or something. We haven't seen it since.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, we've every president since. After Clinton, it was, you know, George W. spent more. Obama spent even more. Trump spent even more. Biden spent even more, right? And it just keeps going up. So let's stop pretending like one party's fiscally responsible.
Oh,
and just have different fiscal priorities.
The other thing that really bothers me is when someone pretends like a president is somehow going to, like, miraculously change their entire life. You know those people, right? Where it's like,
my
whole life hinges on who becomes the president.
I'm going to leave the country or whatever.
Yeah,
else.
It's like,
and go where? Like, who really did that? So,
yeah.
So, bottom line is this: I think the election is something that it has sway in the short term, but we're going to get past this, and the markets are going to figure out quickly. Like, whatever the regulations show up at, unless we eliminate free choice, so as long as we still have some, you know, moniker of capitalism, the markets are going to get creative and figure out ways around it. And then they'll balloon up somewhere else, right? If it's not going to be AI, then maybe it goes to biotech. If it's not biotech, maybe it goes to driverless vehicles. Who knows what the next thing is? But the money shifts around in the economy.
Yeah.
And we can expect it will. And nobody knows when the music stops for the debt. Like, how far can we go before everybody says enough is enough?
Doesn't stop. We just keep...
I don't know.
Keep it plugged in and keep that music going.
I mean, that's modern monetary theory, right? The debt doesn't really matter. Everybody's like watering it down. It's kind of the crux of Bitcoin, right? Hey, you can't do it to this. This asset is outside of government control.
Well, we saw Japan manipulate its currency for how many years?
hey, we can't point the finger. We're doing it
too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're all doing it, right?
Yeah, and everybody's in on it.
These economies still keep working somehow.
So anyway, well, look, I'm looking at the clock and I can tell that we are out of time. So if you are interested in feedback or have financial questions, please give us a call. Matt, how do they reach us?
541-375-0898. You can text that number too. So go to our website, littlejohnfs.com. There's a lot of ways to get a hold of us. We want to chat.
Yep. And as I like to say, as always, if you're not going to do it yourself, find someone that you like and trust to help you. If you don't have that someone, give us a shout.
I like it.
Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've listened to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.